Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to What's Right with Men, a weekly radio program dedicated to exploring and discussing what it means to be a man in a post-feminist world. Now here are your hosts, John Freeman and Roger Wetzel. Well, good afternoon and good evening. And hello, John. How are you?
Hi, Roger. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing well today. So today we have an interesting show. We're going to be talking about what makes men happy. And in that, we're going to try and define what happiness is. Is it possible for men to be truly happy? And are we naturally happy, or are there external factors which affect our happiness? And what is it we can do about it? So before we get started, I want to give out the number for people to call in. It's 1-347-205-9869. That's 347-205-9869. So before we get into happiness, John, let's talk about, I think we have some feedback from last week's show on part two of what men want from women.
That's right. And, we had a comment and a question from Elka, who wanted to say something about trust, because we'd been talking about men wanting to be trusted and supported, and she felt that it was important that trust had to be earned and goes both ways, and that both men and women want that from each other. And I couldn't for a minute disagree with that, though I think trust is a funny thing. It's both earned and given. Sometimes,
right.
I think it's quite important that we have to trust people in order to give them the chance to show that they can be trusted, or to, you know, to respond to that space. So it's a blend of those two things. And then her question was, she asked, if there is a problem of any kind, do men need something to do? Which was something that was coming up in our conversation, like how men want, they want to fix things. And
right.
As distinct from women, women are looking to talk about it. Women want to share. Elka is asking, is it a good idea for women to give men something to do?
Well, I think when, in listening to that first part of that question, if people, when something's wrong with men, what do they need to do? Is that right? Or what do we need? Something, what, can you read that first question, part of the question again?
Well, it's not whether something's wrong with the men. It's just whether women, when they, at least the way I read the question, that kind of in order to support the space of being able to talk about the problem, that perhaps it would be a good idea for women to give men something to do in order that they feel comfortable with being in the space.
I don't know about you, John, but I think when I hear that, it's like, yeah, here's what we need. We need to be left alone so that we can go to our man cave or wherever it is that we go to just be in that space for a while. And then once we're in that space, when we reemerge out of it, then just be able to have a conversation about it, right? That's kind of, I think that's what has worked for me, and it works best for me. And I don't know what are your thoughts on that, but it's not like where women need to talk about a problem and then once they talk about it, it's, you know, okay, I just need to verbalize this and I'll figure it out and not have you fix it kind of thing.
Mm. Well, I know I can go into that. Certainly, I can go into the fixing space, but I'm also quite comfortable listening, probably more comfortable than average in the listening role. So I may not be kind of typical from that point of view, but I am thinking of somebody else who talks about this stuff and who expresses the very strong opinion that, you know, if that's what women want to do, they should get a girlfriend. They shouldn't expect it men, because it's not what men do and not what men are there for. And so while that's not totally my experience, I suspect he may be more more accurate for most people than I would be.
But let me ask you, from kind of what I got from Elka's comment question is, when there's something going on with you, what do you need from a woman, for example? Like, women want to be, women just want to express, they want to be listened to. But on the flip side of that, how does that work for you? Like when something's going on.
Hmm. I get the question. Is I think there may be kind of two different angles for me, because it might depend who I'm talking to. I quite like the space of being, having done so much self-help over the years. I quite like the space of being supported with something which is kind of a little bit more of a process, or something that's focused on assistance. It's not just a kind of listening or advice. I don't like it. I don't think I get off on advice very much. I like to be helped to get clear in my own mind and to come up with my own conclusions. So I quite like using those kind of self-help processes, which is, I guess, part of, you know, why I'm here talking to you on a radio show, because that's kind of what I do. And if I wasn't doing that, if it isn't somebody who is doing that, then probably my next response is to kind of just be, to know that somebody's there for me while I figure it out.
Right. Well, you're an odd duck.
Tell me something I didn't know. So how about you? What's your response?
No, like I said earlier, I think that for me, I think it's part of what you do. It's like getting to the place where I'm able to sit and go, okay, what's this about? What's going on here? And then just kind of listening for an answer, but also being able to go to a space where I can just be alone, and then and go into that process, and then when I come out, be able to talk about it with someone. Which kind of, for me, as you know, over the years, that's where I get my information, by talking, right? I can't just sit and go, I need to get all this information at once and have it like dropped into my head. I need to, when I verbalize, when I talk, you know, I think sometimes like 90% of what I say is filler for the other 10% of the gold that I get out of the conversation, so to speak. So it's a combination of things for me.
Hmm.
But being able to have that space, right? It's like when, in regards to Elka's question, what is it that men need in it? Right? I don't need to verbalize it so much initially, just be able to go in and do that, whatever it is and however it is that I do it. So I hope that answers.
Right.
I hope that answers the question and addresses the comments. that she sent us.
Well, I guess she'll let us know, perhaps, if it didn't.
Yes, exactly.
Perhaps I should remind people that if you want to make comments like that, our email is writeaboutmen@gmail.com. So you can always send things in there, and there's also a forum for discussing stuff on our website, which is www.writeaboutmen.com.
So
what are we talking about this week, Roger?
Now, don't we have a couple other questions?
Oh, were we going to those? Right, we can go to those right back.
Yeah, we might as well get those out of the way before we jump into the topic of the day.
Okay. All right. Yes, there was a little bunch of questions came in from Lindsay from Missouri. All right, maybe I'll take them one at a time. So, Roger, why do men say women are crazy?
Oh, yeah, put me on the spot.
Yep.
I think it goes back. I think that it's interesting. I think it's that whole, it goes back to what we talked about early on about the oppositional language of men and women, right, the opposite sex. And it kind of starts from there. And I think it's that perspective that men have from time to time is, in some more often than others and some not at all, but I think that that idea comes from the fact that we don't understand how women think, right? We believe as men that women should think like us, that they should think more like us, right? And because they don't, that automatically there must be something wrong, so hence you must be crazy because I don't understand how you can't see the world and understand things the way that I do, because obviously I'm right because that's how it is. And I think it's also tied into that whole ego thing. But just off the top of my head, that's kind of what I would say, you know. I don't think that men actually think that women are crazy. I think it's just
a way of saying we don't understand.
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I know that when I was younger, I didn't think women were crazy. I just couldn't understand. And I think another of the reasons why I'm here having these conversations with you is that I spent a lot of time trying to find out how people worked, both women and men, and that involved finding out a lot more about how I worked. But along the way, I think I did a lot of listening I guess if I'd been really clever 20 years ago, I would have written a book like John Gray's The Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, because I think there were a lot of people who wanted to know what I wanted to know, and it didn't actually start to turn up in the world as information until kind of 20 years after I was looking for it.
Right. Yeah.
So for the record, I don't think women are crazy.
No, I don't think so either. I think we might be crazy, but...
Yep. And good thing, too. So, next question. Why are some men afraid of marriage? Maybe I'll go for that one, give you time to...
Oh, I have the answer. I have my answer.
Well, you got married recently. You tell me.
I think that for a lot of years there was this belief that if I got married that I would be trapped. That it was a trap that I couldn't get out of, right? And so instead of opening myself up to that possibility. And, you know, I was then married three times and two unsuccessfully. But I think that there was always that sense of how do I get out of, you know, how could I get out of this if it got really terrible? And also, there was something floating around in my head for years, where it was because I was so uncomfortable with myself and who I was, or who, you know, how I was, is that there was always this idea of what if somebody better came along, right? And I never really examined that a whole lot, and because it's kind of dissipated and disappeared over the years. But when I was younger, there was really that sense of oh my God, if I make this commitment, then somebody else could come along, and then I'm going to lose out on a great opportunity, and not realizing that it was about me and not anybody else. So that's my answer to that question. And what about you?
Well, I think a lot of women are more in a hurry to get married than men are. I'm not sure whether I believe that men are afraid of marriage, but I think they don't want it as soon as it often starts to come towards them. You know, you're in a steady relationship, and the conversation generally doesn't come up from you. If you're a man, it comes up from, I think, typically from the woman. And I think men would like their space and their freedom for longer. They'd like, I think, very often to be more kind of established, more to feel like they've got some things done before they go into the marriage, and particularly the child rearing thing.
Right.
So. Yeah, but there are some people, I'm sure, who are afraid of commitment. I mean, that's kind of a known fact. But I don't know how much more it's true of men than it is of women.
Right. Yeah, and I think that this would be we had talked about this before the show today about introducing the douche of the week, right? And it kind of ties in to the fact that I was reading a story yesterday about a guy who was engaged to get married, and he decided that he didn't want to get married. So his way of dealing with that is having someone call his fiancée and tell her that he was dead. And the guy was the guy that called her was supposedly his dad, and it's like, of course, obviously she found out that the guy wasn't dead, but it's like, dude, you know, just suck it up and just say, hey, this isn't going to work, and move on. But faking your death is a pretty extreme way of getting out of getting married, I would say.
I think short of actually dying, I think it's the most extreme I've heard.
Yeah, well, if he was dead, it would have been sad and tragic, but at the same time, it would have been the truth. But, you know, it was pretty pathetic, to be honest. Anyway,
yeah.
So I think that's it for the questions for today from last week's show. So we should probably jump into today's topic, which is what makes us happy. And I was, you know, this topic actually came up for me, John, about, oh God, it was a little over a year ago when I was flying home from Spain, and I was on the plane, and I started thinking about, am I happy, right? And just looking at that from and questioning that and just saying, okay, so what does it mean to be happy? And it was almost like a foreign concept because I'd never really thought about it before. And so kind of getting ready for this show, it's like, all right, let's dive into this and see, you know, how do we define happiness, right? And I think, I don't know about you, John, but I think that one of the things that really has affected our perspective as human beings on happiness, there's been like two really powerful influences on that. One is free market economy, consumerism type, Madison Avenue advertising, and the other one has been religion. And, you know, I don't know about you, but it's like from the time I can remember, it's like happiness is about, well, you know, that whole idea of the American dream, right? Everybody owns their house, everybody has two cars, everybody has a family, and they have kids, and they have a great job, and they go on vacation, and they buy a boat, and, you know, on and on and on and on, and wear the best clothes and all that kind of stuff. That'll make you happy. So I was, like I said, in getting ready for the show, it's like, okay, let me see what religion says about happiness. So I looked at the two most influential religions in the West, on Judaism and Catholicism, right? And here's what I found. Christians, according to Christians, our ultimate happiness is found in relationship with God through Jesus, prayer, obedience to teachings, who overcome sin, separation from God, right? That was from the CatholicEducation.org website. And the other one was Judaism's perspective on joy is grounded in the spiritual goals for which we are created. Authentic happiness is that which is connected to the greatest source of meaning, the infinite God, right? And it's just interesting how these ideas have influenced our concept of happiness. So, you know me, I think that it's important that we work from the same definition. So this is kind of the definition of happiness that we're going to work from as we move forward. And that is, happiness is a mental or emotional state of well-being characterized by positive or pleasant emotions ranging from contentment to intense joy. And again, it's an internal job, right? Would you not agree with that?
I'd agree with that very much. And I think it's one of the things that makes it a kind of interesting but not easy to discuss, because I think different people have different ranges of emotion. And for some people, I think contentment is happiness. And for some people, contentment would feel really dull because they're not in intense joy and they actually kind of desire that. I also think it's very difficult to tell when other people are happy. I think so. It's not always something that people really show, or at least many people, I think, don't really show. There are some people who probably are more naturally inclined to be sort of demonstrating their happiness all the time. The more outgoing kind of personalities. And I think for a lot of people, you don't know, because it's an internal state.
Right.
It's kind of same.
Yeah, it's like I told you the other day that when I owned a restaurant, I had two employees that worked for me, and they were both siblings. And the the woman was probably one of the most miserable people I have ever met in a lot of different ways. And her brother was someone who, in over a two-year span of working 5 days a week, I never saw the guy ever unhappy. I saw him hungover one day, but I never, ever saw him in a bad mood. He was always happy. He was always singing. He always had a smile on his face. It was like, wow, how does that happen, right? And, you know, there's that whole science has done, and you know, they've come up with a lot of ideas about this, and one of them is the whole biology of happiness, right? And I was watching these two scientists talk about happiness, right? It's always fascinating to do research for a show because I come up with some stuff that I didn't know before. And one of the things that these guys were talking about is that when we're born, we have a neurotransmitter, all of us, in our brains called dopamine, which are connected to feelings of pleasure and happiness. And when we get to be in our teens, as we grow older, we start losing the dopamine synapses and neurons in our brain, right? And from what they've found so far, there's no way to regenerate those. And the fascinating thing about that is that if you lose too many of those synapses or neurons, it can lead to Parkinson's disease, which I think is really interesting. And you know, when I heard that, it kind of took me in a circle back to like the whole thing with Robin Williams, right? I mean, here was a guy who reported that one of the reason that he committed suicide is because he was had the early onset of Parkinson's disease. Yet here was a guy who made everybody laugh and made people happy, and at the same time had issues with depression, right? I mean, so it's like you look at that, you go, wow, there's a puzzle to take apart in there. So I think, you know, it's just interesting, right?
Yeah. I mean, I go along with quite a lot of what you're saying, and in thinking about it, you know, what does happiness mean to me? What's my relationship with that? One of the things I was reminded of was there's a very old system, goes all the way back to the Greeks, called the four humors, which is, you know, four different kind of temperaments, which the three that I'm not are phlegmatic, choleric, and sanguine, and the fourth that I am is melancholic, which is kind of defined as quiet and analytical. And so for me, I think, you know, I have to relate how I feel happy and how I express happiness to something that's got that kind of fundamental quality of, well, what's my baseline?
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody has a potentially, you know, a different baseline. And so what's happy for one person? And so, you know, one of the people I spoke to today described happiness as being buoyant and expansive. And that was, in the moment where she said that, that was clearly kind of real for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an expression of how she is, which is quite distinct from how I am. And so, you know, I think that the notion of positive and or pleasant emotions, from contentment to intense joy, which I think is what I wrote down that you said a few minutes ago, it's like, well, yeah, there is that range, and we have to accept that when we talk about this, what makes men happy or what makes women happy is going to show up somewhere in that range, and it's going to be different for different people.
Right. So if you'd like to call in and join us, our number is 347-205-9869. Just can you that list that you just of four things that you were just talking about, and what
yep.
did you say you were? Melancholy and what?
Melancholic. And the others were phlegmatic and choleric and sanguine.
Can you talk a little bit about each one of those just briefly? Because I think that's fascinating.
Right. Well, let me see what I can recall or what I can bring up about that. So when the Greeks brought this up, it was a kind of they had a fairly limited idea of body chemistry, and they had the notion of two different kinds of bile, which were black bile and yellow bile, and then there was blood and phlegm, which are the
Great.
Two visible things that
yeah.
you can see
if you're talking to
people. And so those who were driven by blood, which is sanguine, they're kind of pleasure seekers and they're sociable. And then the choleric ones, and I'm not sure which form of bile this was, but the choleric is kind of, it's got heat to it, and they tend to be more driven and sometimes angry. So there's an ambitious and leader-like quality to that. And then phlegmatic is kind of relaxed and peaceful. So I don't know whether that helps you. Are you sorry?
No, yeah, because it's really interesting because, you know, in knowing you and just hearing you say that and identifying yourself with one of those four, it's like, yeah, that's kind of who you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just in an overview, you know, not real specifically, but I would say that was pretty close. I wasn't sure whether that was just a thing because you were English or not, but...
No, not all English
anyway.
People are melancholic.
Okay. Well, you know, it's interesting because I was reading something about the fact that there's like the percent, how they break down, how scientists have studied happiness over time, and how they come up with like a pie chart, right? That's like 100%. So the way that they broke the pie chart into pieces was this, that 50% of people of their happiness is determined by genetics, right? That we're all born and we all have a range of happiness that we operate in, and that no matter what happens in your life, whether great things happen or whether tragedies happen, that we will revert to our set point at some point in time, right? And I think it's just interesting how we look at this whole topic and say, you know, I mean, how many of us have said, if I buy this car, I'm going to be really happy, right? And then what, a week? 2 weeks, a month, like, oh, yeah, it's just a car, right? It's just a deep well that we dive into here, right? But I think if we can keep these things in our mind, like what you were just talking about, right, and this study, these ideas of having genetics play a part in our happiness, right. I mean, for me,
yeah,
I'm not
so that
sure.
Starts the baseline.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm not sure if I have what my genetic set point is, so to speak, for happiness. Because sometimes I question that. It's like, am I happy? Yeah, I guess I am. I'm not sure what that means, though. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like like talking to the guy who did some work for me. I was talking to this. He did some driveway work for me a couple of days ago, and I was talking to him, and I said to him, "Is Joe your partner?" And he goes, "Yeah." And I said, "Is Joe your son?" He goes, "Yes." And he looked at me, and he held his fingers about an inch apart, and he says, "I'm about this far away from having a perfect life." It's like, I don't know that I've ever met anybody that has ever said that to me before, right? That is able, especially a man, right? I've probably had women say that to me, but never have I had a man say to me, "I'm this far away from having a perfect life." And it was like, wow, I was kind of happy to hear that, you know? But with regard to that, the whole thing with men and happiness, it's really interesting because they've done studies on men and women and happiness and how women are happier than men and how married women are happier than married men and how single women are happier than single men and how widowed women are happier than widowed men. It's like, wow. I guess this is kind of why we're doing a show.
Did you happen to pick up in that list whether married women were happier than single women?
No. But
that would have been quite interesting, though. But I guess it's slightly off topic. So why are men generally not very happy?
Not as happy as women. I don't know. Maybe it's a genetic makeup, or maybe there's something another aspect to things which might be addressed here in a second about some of the other two points of that 100% pie of how it's broken down into. But you know, one of the other things, John, is what I shared with you the other day is with regard to that whole idea of men and happiness and the concept of men are happy when they're young and men are happy when they're old, right? And with the idea behind that is that men are most unhappy in their life around the age of 45, right? And it's like that, you know, you look at that whole thing about like depression rates are highest in that age range on average. It's the midlife crisis point, right? It's where men start looking at it and going, God, I've been doing this crappy job for like however long, and I have to continue to do this. This is not feeding me. I'm not passionate about it. It's just like that whole idea of being stuck in a rut, right? And feeling trapped. So, you know, when I first read that, it's like, what do you mean? Like, you're happy when you're young and you're happy when you're old. But when you're in the middle of your life, you're unhappy. And I think I can relate to that. I don't know about you, but, you know, I can see where that has some real validity, you know?
Yeah. For me, I think the pattern of my life was a bit kind of... you can call me weird again. It was different than most people's because I was at 45. I wasn't stuck in that job, and I was probably that was quite possibly one of my kind of happiest periods. That's partly because I started a relationship and a family that actually worked quite late, so I wasn't in. You know, I was on the same kind of timeline that you're describing. So it is, you know, I think I can certainly relate to what you're describing, and knowing that seems to be a very common pan for people to go through, and the midlife crisis is such a kind of accepted thing.
I think that it's for me. Well, you're a contrarian. I'm just going to say it. It's because you're English, and you know. But I think that for me, I look back and I go, yeah, it's like I think that it was during that time period, and maybe we could have someday we could have our astrologer guru come on and talk about men and midlife crisis and the whole thing with the concept of Saturn return, where every 28 years everything lines up to the day we were born, right? And so I don't know, maybe there's something to that, but I think for me during that period of my life, I would have to say that that was kind of me, that I was, you know, I was depressed. I was looking around going, all right, what am I going to do with myself? I've been doing this work for however many years, and it's not fulfilling me anymore, and so what is it that I want to do next? And so I can totally relate to that. Anyway. So the next aspect, the next percentage of that 100% pie has to do with intentional behaviors, which accounts for 40%, right, of happiness. And those are the actions.
That's a pretty big slice.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's actions we choose to take, right? It's like in order to be happy, what they found is not to become, not to adapt to what it is that you do, right? To constantly, consciously vary the things that you do in your life. Like, don't get into routines, basically, right? Like, if you're driving to work 5 days a week, don't drive the same way, right? If you jog every day, go a different way, right? It's about creating variety in your life, right? And they found that to make people happier, right? And I think that that's true. I think.
Well, that one certainly works for me, because and not just from the point of view of there isn't a single point in my life where I could have looked back 5 years and said this is exactly where I thought I would be 5 years ago, and that wasn't always intentional. That's just the way it has been. And so yeah, I'm certainly grateful for the variety in my own life, but I also think actually it probably goes a bit deeper than just kind of varying routine. It's actually a sense of whether you have choice and whether you have possibility in your life, so that there's the belief and the attitude that says, well, if I want to do something different, I can. I'm not, and it's perhaps the flip side of what you were talking about, of people feeling they're in a rut and stuck. It's like, well, the alternative is, what would it be like if we felt that we had that level of empowerment, that level of choice, that if I want to change my life and do something different now because I've kind of fulfilled that part of me that I was doing before, well, hell, that's what I can do and that's what I will do, and I'm going to get on and do it.
Totally. And I think that that's, one of the things that, you look at I mean, there's probably, I know that there's places on this planet right now where people, the last thing that people are thinking about is, hey, am I happy today? I mean, you know, if you're in survival.
Yeah, they're just asking, am I still alive? I'm going to be alive tomorrow.
Exactly. And you know, I heard one guy talk about the fact that happiness is something that is pretty new to humans. And being able to ask that question, because it's about choice, and we always, you know, our ancestors didn't really have a lot of choices at some point in our history, right?
It's very definitely this is a Western, you know, a Western luxury that we have this.
Yeah, our life conditions allow us to be able to contemplate happiness and seek happiness, right? Which is a good thing.
Well, it is. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I look forward to the day when there's no one on the planet who doesn't have the same level of choice in their life that we do. I mean, that's something to aspire to.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things, John, I found really interesting, and I also found interesting in doing this is, you know, we've all heard about the stories about people who won the lottery, right? And how, you know, a lot of people that, I mean, I don't know, I don't play the lottery that much. I don't know very many people that do, and I'm sure, I don't know whether millionaires or billionaires play the lottery. But, you know, a lot of times you hear these people that win the lottery and then like a year or two later they're broke, right? And there's a lot of different causes and reasons for that. But they did a study of people who, which I think is really interesting, a study of people who became quadriplegics and won the lottery.
How many of those are there?
What's that? I don't know. You know, I don't know. I don't know.
Sorry, I interrupted.
But no, I think it is. It's like, okay, who thought of this study? But I think the results are fascinating. That 6 months after someone became a quadriplegic, most of them return to their prior levels of happiness. But 6 months after winning the lottery, the average winner were slightly below their baseline before they bought the ticket. And I just think that's interesting because, you know, we all have this idea, and we've all played with the idea of, God, if I won the lottery, I would do this and this and this, and I would be like totally happy, right? But again, there's factors that go into that whole thing of winning, and what's your mindset? You know, happiness is about, it's an internal job, right? It's not about the external. But you know, a lot of us have bought into that. You know, hey, if we win the lottery, we're going to live happily ever after. If we get married and we find the right guy and we have children, we're going to live happily ever after. And I think we've been sold a bill of goods, personally. But
right. And then what's the last 10%, Roger?
The last 10% are circumstances, right? It's like what job we have, how much money we make, our health, social status. And one of the things I found really interesting, and I think we can all relate to this in some way if we've had this experience of, for example, having a job where we're totally into it, right? Gallup did a poll of Americans in their work life, right, which is part of the circumstance, part of that 10%. And they found that 89% of Americans are satisfied or very satisfied with their jobs, right? And I know for me in my work history, I can kind of relate to this, and the fact that there were certain things that I would do where I would, like, I would wake up and it's like, yeah, I'm like totally into that whole, what's the guy's name that we talked about this morning that I can't pronounce his name?
Csikszentmihalyi.
Yes. That he's, say it again.
Csikszentmihalyi.
Yeah, he's a psychologist, and he wrote the book Slow. It's about when we get into the flow of something, and all of a sudden we're just in the zone where it's like being able to just know what the next thing to do, you know, consciously we're just aware, and it's like we do need to do this, then we need to do that, and it's what athletes get in. And one of the things with regards to happiness is when we're in that flow and we're doing things for other people or we're helping other people out, where we're creating value, right, in our life and creating life, a value in the other person's life. Those are things that make people happy. And I know for me in my life, when I've been in that flow, it's like money ceases to be an issue, right? And that's one of the things that they found with regards to happiness, is that if you're in that flow and you are doing work that's creating value in your life and creating value in another person's life, it doesn't matter how much money you make, right? And that, and they've studied that. People can make millions or people can make $40,000, or, and the level of happiness is the same if those things are involved, creating value and receiving value.
Right, and which is encouraging for most of us, since most people don't expect to make $1 million, and lots of people are existing on a great deal less than that. And it's a kind of a cliche to suggest that, you know, if people are kind of not really very happy, they should actually go out and help other people and they'll actually get themselves happier by it. And if you're not happy, it's not the thing that you want to hear, but I certainly believe it's true. I think it works when people do it.
Right.
And I'm kind of, I'm just having, with a few minutes to go, I'm just having this sense that we've had a kind of an interesting conversation around all sorts of aspects of happiness without going anywhere near the question of what makes men happy. And maybe being able to be in the flow and maybe feeling that you've done something to help other people is maybe that's as good as it gets. I don't know.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because it's like I'm sitting here thinking, all right, so how do we kind of bring this all together and to a point, right? Like, what is it that makes us happy? And I think it is that concept of flow, right? That, well, what's, okay, once again, please say this person's name.
Csikszentmihalyi.
Yeah, I'll read something that he said, which I think kind of would kind of wrap up the whole concept of what makes us happy, right? And what he talks about is, he says that the synergy of different aspects of consciousness, where you wish you could go on forever, because it feels like completely fulfilling something that you can do well, and you're able to see it happening and feel like nothing else matters. That moment by moment, you know what you have to do with a feeling of control, and you're able to forget your problems and yourself, and the ego disappears. And I think that you can do that with pretty much anything in your life, right? Whether it's relationship, whether it's work, whether it's play, that if you're in that flow space, it's just so easy, and there's almost a feeling of, and I've experienced, it's almost like a feeling of euphoria in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean I go along with that a great deal, and I think it's a wonderful space to get into. The only thing I'd want to add to that is I'm sure it's possible to be in that light, that with the whole of your life all of the time. But
right.
I can't pretend that that's where I would say I've been. But the other thing I would want to throw into this mix as one of the things that is, not quite a secret of happiness, but which goes a long way towards that, is the practice of gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
I think the more we focus on being grateful for the things that are good, the more that increases our happiness, and I think it's also attractive. I think it also has the effect of attracting more happiness into our lives. And I think gratitude's a pretty important piece of the picture.
Gratitude, appreciation, and being present in the moment. I mean, how many of us, it's like you look at that and it's like when you're in a relationship, when you're in your job, whenever it, when you're alone, it's like how often are you just present to that other person, right? Or how often are you present in your job where you're not thinking about anything else, you're just in that flow of, you know, of presence, And when you can do that, I think that you are a lot happier because you don't have those distractions. You're just like in that place where it's like, yeah, I see you, you see me, and we're conscious with one another, and like you said, in gratitude and appreciation. And if you can get there, it's like a practice.
Yep.
Wouldn't you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think it's a choice and a decision about kind of being in, finding our way into that habit.
Right. I mean, it's so funny. I mean, you know, I think the more, for me, the older I get, the more I realize it's like all that external stuff, well, it's nice to have, isn't the cause of any kind of happiness at all. It's about the relationship with self, the relationship with other people, and how you interact with yourself and other people that really does, at the bottom line, make it is about happiness, right?
Yeah, and about you, it's a choice, choosing the attitude we take to our circumstances a lot of the time.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's like the choice, it's also about choices, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to choose to be in this moment, in this situation? And we all have the choice to be happy. We all have the choice to be sad. We all have the choice to be mad. You make the choice and your attitude. Well, we're about at the end of our show, and you want to give out our contact information again?
So, yeah, the email is writeaboutmen@gmail.com. The forum and the blogs and everything else that we're doing is on www.writeaboutmen.com. And we would love to hear from you.
Yes, absolutely. And I think next week's show, we discussed, I think we're going to talk about empowerment and what does that mean. Is that right?
And how do we get there?
Right. So we want to thank everybody for listening. Please send in your questions, your comments, any ideas for future shows that you would like to have us address. And we want to thank you. And John, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Roger.
Talk to you soon.
It's been fun.
Take care. Bye.